This is Dr. Shannon M. Clark with A Doctor Delivers Podcast, and today I am discussing gynecologic office procedures and pain control with OBGYN Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Have a listen.
And so, hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. And we are going to start this discussion tonight about pain control in office gynecology. So a lot of you are joining tonight because you've seen our videos. Actually, Dr. Clark got started with the issue before I even did. She had seen a video. Do you want to talk about how the first video you saw that got your attention?
Yeah, and I apologize. I don't remember the user's name, but I don't remember, and I do apologize. I should have looked at that before we started this. But basically, she's an attorney who was talking about her office IUD procedure and how painful it was, and that she wasn't prepared for the pain. She didn't feel like she was prepared enough for what to expect. She actually projectile vomited during the procedure and was not explained about the tenaculum. I'm sure you guys have seen that video about the instrument we use on the cervix to kind of stabilize the cervix for some office gynecologic procedures that kind of went viral for a while. What, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you fine. I was demonstrating the tenaculum.
Two teeth that go into the top part of the cervix, and she was not aware of that. So she was basically saying, you know, I wasn't informed, I wasn't prepared, I didn't have pain control, and that it was traumatizing for her. By and large, there was a lot of people on her comments that agreed with her, but then there were some gynecologists who were saying things like, it's customary for, this is what we do, it's standard practice, and this and that. And then she made a follow-up video saying, I don't give a crap if it's customary, if it's traumatizing some patients. Yes, some patients may tolerate it just fine, and then there's those of us who don't tolerate it fine, and we need to have the option for pain control. So that was kind of the videos where I jumped on and I agreed with her. And I said that there does need to be pain control available for those who have those types of procedures. And the main ones we're talking about, Mary Claire, are going to be the IUD insertion, IUD insertion and removal, the coposcopy biopsies. So that's if you have an abnormal pap smear and then they look at the cervix under a microscope and decide to take biopsies of the cervix with the alligator clamp. Which is kind of similar to a tenaculum in that it's long and it's metal, but the end of it looks a little bit different. What else were we talking about? Oh, the endometrial biopsy. Those are probably the main ones. We also, on the side, we talked about HSG, which is also very painful. That's not gynecology, though. That is done with radiology. But again, radiology. It's pain control for that. And it's very painful as well. So that's kind of how I got on the topic. And then Mary Claire then joined in the discussion as well.
So if you know, have seen her videos, seen mine, we have millions and millions of followers, tens of thousands of comments, and it really has elevated the issue for us to the point where we feel like things need to change from an institutional basis, from how we teach and train healthcare provider basis, and policy from the higher up. So knowing that in order to get more attention for this issue and maybe get people at those levels to pay attention, I would need data. So a couple of days ago, I put together a survey, just a simple Google Doc, and 21,100 of you so far have taken the survey and told us about your experiences, good, bad, and very ugly, some of having these procedures done. And it was only it's just a way to gather information so that we can, that can lead to policy change eventually. And so thank you, all of you. The survey is still open. And if you're just joining us, we have about 500 followers watching right now. I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. This is Dr. Shannon Clark. Please, you know, to keep the algorithm alive, tap the screen to like the video if you like what we're hearing. And we are discussing pain control in office gynecology. So we're doing this discussion for a number of reasons. One, again, to elevate your stories, you know, make this issue more aware, and the more awareness we have, the more likely we are to be able to change the standard of care and the standard practice. And so the biggest issues appear to be the most common ones, not saying other gynecologic procedures don't have problems, but, you know, we have to start somewhere. And to generate data, I picked the very common endometrial biopsy, intrauterine IUD placement, and then the colposcopy with biopsies. And so, Shannon, can you talk about your own personal experience as a resident and training with gynecologic procedures? And then how can we kind of justify that we didn't realize how much of an issue this was?
So, I mean, and this is for the, you know, mainly for the non-medical people. When we're in residency, we are taught a lot in a very short 4-year period of time. And see, I did my residency 2000, 2004, and I did all these office gynecologic procedures. And basically, we were taught two things, really. That the cervix doesn't really have sensation or nerves, which is not true. But when you're a resident, you're new, you're the people that are training you are telling you that, you trust them. And, you know, why would they teach you that if it's not true? So we do what we're told. And we didn't use pain control for those types of procedures. Did I have a lot of patients that were in pain? Yes. But I was kind of also taught that if they're in pain, just go quicker. If you can, right?
Yeah.
Get over quicker.
Yeah. Go faster.
Go faster. And
get it over with.
Get it over with. And, or you'll say, okay, cough when I do this. And, you know, and we're taught that that's supposed to distract them. Or, you know, have them listen to music. And the reality is, and again, I just want to say that we were young, we were newbies. I'm sure you were taught the same thing. And it's, we didn't do any of this with malice, but we're taught that by people who've been doing these procedures for a lot longer than us. So you trust that that's the way it's supposed to be. But then with experience, as you go along in your career and you start seeing that things don't make sense, and this is not just for what we're talking about today, it's for anything. Then you learn how you're going to be with your patients and you learn what you don't want to do, then things start to click. Well, this is not the best way to do things. Are there other, or there are other alternatives? And I shared briefly in the video that I was responding to from the attorney that had talked about her IUD experience that I had an endometrial biopsy in the office with a tenacular mama cervix. And it was awful. It was awful. I was telling my OBGYN is actually that did this is my friend. And I was telling him, please, I can't do it. It's stop. And the tenacular mama cervix, he said, just a few more minutes, or, you know, a few more seconds. And I threw up as well. I didn't projectile vomit, but I did throw up and it was painful. And when I talked about that, people automatically commented, what it took you to go through that before you realized it was a pain, you know, that it was painful. Well, in some ways, yes, because how else was I supposed to know? Again, this is other things is what I was taught. And as physicians, sometimes we don't understand until we go through it ourselves. I never understood what childbirth was until I went through it. I didn't understand what a breast biopsy was until I had to go through it. I didn't understand what a LEAP was until I had one. So sometimes it takes us going through these things or being on magnesium for preterm labor, all those things. Yes, I was taught about it and I know what I could tell from my patients, but until I personally went through it, did I really get an appreciation? Miscarriage, you know, pregnancy loss, all of those things you think you know until it's you, and then it gives you a better appreciation. Would you agree with that, Mary Claire?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm reading the comments and, you know, we are getting, I want to hear your voice. I know you hear us, all voices count, the good, the bad, the ugly. I know, you know, once we got out of training and then we're in, and the way I was trained is completely different than the way that I ended up practicing after watching women like, I can do better than this. How about we use this Pataki needle that I would use for a LEAP injection? We would do local injections for LEAP procedures, which is a cone biopsy, a more invasive biopsy. Well, I have the needle, I have the lidocaine. I can just inject her cervix and I know she'll be more comfortable. And that just became my standard of practice. I started, you know, if I knew she was anxious, I was offering anti-anxiety medications, just a couple, you know, before the procedure. And so this was not considered standard of care, but this is something how my practice changed as I was trying to accommodate what I realized then was painful procedures. I also had a very painful procedure done in the radiology department, but it was shooting. It was the history. So those of you who've done fertility workups, I had a hysterosalpingogram, which is, you know, I went to the radiology department. I was a medical student. I was so desperate to get pregnant. I would have done anything. I mean, if you've ever gone through fertility, and those of you who have understand, you take for granted your fertility until it's taken away from you. And then all of a sudden it is a be all end all of your existence to get pregnant. And they're like, lay on this table. We're going to shove this giant. So I'd never been pregnant, never had a baby. I had a small vagina, I think. And well, I'm sexually active, but they pulled out the big Bertha and I didn't say a word. And the big giant speculum.
They're not going to know what the big Bertha is.
Oh, the very, 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 very large speculum. And I guess that's all they had in radiology. And the radiologist, who I'm sure utilizes speculums twice a year, inserted it. And I was like coming off the radiology table and they're, ma'am, you need to stay still, ma'am. And I'm like, okay, okay. You know, tears streaming out of my eyes. Then they thread the catheter through my cervix and start injecting the dye. And while the fluoroscopy's on, you really have to stay still there. And I'm in excruciating pain while my uterus is just contracting for all get out as it's being assaulted by this contrast media. And then it goes out into your fallopian tubes. It was horrific. And then they leave, you know, pull the speculum out. Okay, we're done. Your tubes are open. Yay. And I'm like sitting on the table. Yay. Okay, I don't have blocked tubes. Yay for me. But I can barely get off the table. I laid on the floor in the exam room sweating until the nausea passed. And then was like, so then anytime I knew a patient was going for that procedure, I went with them. I made sure I knew when they were going. I would run down to radiology. I would put the speculum in. I would thread the catheter. I would take a speculum from my unit so that I knew I had the right size. I was so paranoid. And I would make sure she was pre-medicated before the procedure, adequately pre-medicated, and have someone drive her home because it was horrible.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier on about policy change. We don't even really need policy change. We just need the narrative to change and that it's okay to offer pain control for these procedures. And the reason why is this. Another video I did was about vasectomies, which a vasectomy is an office procedure. Yes, there's a little cut there. And obviously, you're going to need local anesthesia. But according to their former guidelines from the American Urological Society for how to do an in-office vasectomy for males, IV sedation IV anesthesia or going to the OR if the patient cannot tolerate it in the office is an expert opinion. That means that the experts in their field have said if the patient can't tolerate this office procedure, please take them to the OR or please give them IV anesthesia or pre-medicate them. But we don't have anything like that from our like ACOG or anything like that about doing
statement,
that.
Just statement. Yeah.
Out here. So, it just needs to be practiced. And actually, you don't even need ACOG to give you the blessing. As any individual provider that's doing these procedures, we can still do it. You know, it's just acknowledging that it's an issue, which I think is part of the problem. I think the field of obstetrics and gynecology, by and large, has a really crappy reputation right now for multiple reasons. One of those, and you can add on to this, Mary Claire, is because of the field's willingness and history of ignoring the pain needs of our patients, whether it be in childbirth, whether it be for office gynecologic procedures, whether it be for anything. If you're pregnant and you're in pain, everybody says, oh, it's just you're pregnant and you have to go away when you're delivered. So why are we ignoring or dismissing the pain needs of our patients? Why do you think, what would be your take on that?
You know, I think about things that were whispered in our training as a woman even, but you know, you are so nose to the grind, get through this. You have to pass this exam. You have to take this board. You have to do all these things. You're rushing to see all these patients, but then something's not clicking in the back of your head. And it's like that whispering of it's all in her head. She's being dramatic. She's, you know, there's no the whole no nerve endings on the cervix. Shannon and I trained on different ends of the country. Okay. This is pervasive. And I know there's probably a few OB-GYNs or nurse practitioners watching this. I know you've heard this. Mm-hmm. We were all taught this. And do you know where it comes from? It comes from a 1953 study done by a sexual medicine researcher named Kinsey. And he published two books, one on male sexuality, one on females, which were instant bestsellers. And for the women, he put them in stirrups, did an exam, and took a cotton swab Q-tip, long enough to touch their cervix and said, do you feel this? And most of them said no. And therefore, in his disestimation, there's no nerve endings on the cervix. And that was published. He also tested them with bigger probes and they felt it, but he forgot to publish that part. And that publishing of they didn't feel the Q-tip somehow got propagated into, this was in 1953. You don't have any nerve. There's not a lot of nerve endings. The cervix doesn't have a lot of nerve endings. You can't feel this. And it is pervasive to this day. I saw hundreds of comments of women being told the same thing by their physicians. You don't need pain meds. It won't work. There's no nerve endings on the cervix. There's nothing we can do. So, and I was gaslighting myself for a hot second. Like, wait. I know I've heard this. Wait. And I went to the medical textbooks and the anatomy and made sure I found drawings with nerves in the cervix. I even made a TikTok about it because I was like, oh my goodness. So thank you everyone so far for the taps, the likes, the shares. We are trying to elevate this. We're only trying to share experiences and elevate this issue. If you haven't taken the survey, it's on my page at the link in my bio. You're welcome to take it. The survey is still open. The more voices we have, the more validity, you know, the more recognized the story will get. It's called the Gynecologic Procedure Survey. You'll find it top of my link in bio.
Oh, I'm on TikTok here at TikTok Baby Doc. But behind the scenes, Mary Claire and I have been talking a lot over the past 48 hours or so. And we have some ideas that works what we're going to do to try to change this. And we're going to need your all's help eventually. So with another part of what we're going to do. So just pay attention. You know, Mary Claire will announce it on her platform when it's time and I'll announce it on mine. But you guys are going to help us make a change as well. So we will look to you guys for that. One of the other things that
commented, Shannon, you shouldn't scare women like this. Stone Taylor one. Do you think we're scaring women?
About what?
About talking about how women have pain during procedures. The vast majority of women actually have pain.
I think it's very obvious that there's an issue. And do some individuals tolerate these procedures that we're speaking of just fine? Yeah, they do. But that doesn't mean because a certain portion of the population does that the other ones just have to deal with it. And there, we have to talk to them ahead of time. Let them know, be honest. This is what you might feel because what's typically said is you might feel a pinch on your cervix in this biopsy. You might feel a cramp. That's not typically what people feel. So preparing them actually ahead of time and explaining exactly what's going to be used might be enough because they, at least they know what's happening. But it's not to scare individuals. This is an issue and it's been an issue. It's just that it's not talked about by the medical community enough. It's being talked about. There's numerous articles on non-medical related sites and magazines and news outlets, but it's not being talked about in our community as physicians. So it's not a scaring. It's giving people the information and empowering them to have these conversations with their providers or their OBGYNs if the OBGYNs are not doing it. People have the right to ask what you have having it.
We are going to go over some of the options that you can ask for. So hang on and go grab a pen so you can write some of this stuff down. And we're going to try to empower you on things that you can. And we have studies to back it up that actually prove by doing these measures, your pain is less.
And the other component of this whole thing, I'm sorry, about them saying, why are we scaring? Listen, in the field of OBGYN, we are dealing with the most intimate parts of an individual's body. Then we put them in stirrups. Then we put something in their vagina. And especially for those who have had any kind of trauma or a history of sexual assault, that is something to be considered as well. And if we're not paying attention to their pain needs and we're just telling them to grin and bear it, that's re-traumatizing them all over again. But even for those who don't have a history of that, it can still be traumatizing. So this is the reality. And it's not to scare anybody, but it's to empower them to ask questions of their provider. Would you agree? I mean, we're not trying to, my goal is not to scare, but
absolutely not.
They have the right to ask for pain control and they have the right to know exactly what's being done. Exactly what's being done.
And so, you know, when you go to have any biopsy done on your body, anywhere I can think of in the body, your nose, your eye, your mouth, your breasts, your whatever. If it was done without pain management, local anesthesia, topical anesthesia, pain control, whatever, analgesia, So anesthesia is when you inject something in the tissue to numb it. Analgesia is when you take something that fights the pain on a chemical basis. So then when we say those words, I want you guys to understand. And you have the right to ask for these things. And so if I was having, Shannon had, or you share your leg, she's had biopsies on her skin. I know if you want to share that, I didn't want to rat you out for melanoma. And imagine walking in and them just coming after you with a punch biopsy with nothing, that would be barbaric. That would be unthinkable. And that our profession is doing this to women, taking tissue out of your body for pathologic purposes to test it, to see, what's going on there without anything is kind of mind blowing to me.
Mm-hmm. And, and then I've also talked about this on social media. I started social media to talk about my experience with being a first time parent after age 40, having my children almost at, 9 days shy of my 43rd birthday. But obviously you're on here and you start educating and you learn a lot more. But the one thing that I was not prepared for in this whole experience was learning about all the experiences that people have had with obstetrical or gynecological providers, procedures, childbirth, where they felt that they weren't heard, they were dismissed, they had bad experiences, certain things were said to them that I would, be like, what? And you hear it a few times and you think, oh, that's a one-off, but we're not just hearing it a few times. This is happening and people are having these experiences. And these are things that we have to talk about, because what's going to happen is, if we don't change the narrative as a profession, these patients are not going to come back. They're going to miss their healthcare. They're going to not want to get their pap smear. They're not going to want to come in for a hospital birth. And, I'm not saying, we're not going to talk about that whole topic about where to have your child, but people are avoiding hospitals, they're avoiding providers. They're not getting their, pelvic exams, whatever biopsies they need, because it's traumatizing for them. So we have to make it better as a profession and as a field, so that not only are we doing what's right, but our patients are going to come back and get the care that they need, right?
Right. And that is what floored me on the very first video I did on this. It was it popped up on my For You page on TikTok. It was a gentleman who was looking at a cartoon explaining what a pap smear is. And it was, like patient information card. Here you sit in the stirrups and then we use the speculum with pictures of things. And he was just incredulous, like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys put up with this and yada, 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 yada. And he did it really well. And it was really precious and informational. So I'm reading the comments in this video. And the one woman who had posted, I won't go back. I had so much trauma. If I die, I die. And there were 30,000 likes on that comment. And that is where my mind was blown. Like, she would rather die than go back. Like, I didn't realize. I knew that women had pain from procedures, yes. But I did not realize the depth of the trauma and the volume of women who felt the same way. That's where my mind was blown. And this leads me to our next point, Shannon, is why do you think there's a double standard when it comes to male versus female pain? Women are expected to put up with pain. And I don't think men are. We're OB-GYN, so we don't treat men. Once we deliver baby boys, they go off.
Yeah.
But I see a double standard here.
No, I mean, this has been years in the making when most of the medical professionals were males. And, I think that's where it started. And, I've seen it, coming up. And it's the double standard. But it's also how, women, egg-producing individuals, people who can have children or, have a uterus, are kind of taught that they have to just take it. And when you see a patient that's actually apologizing because they can't tolerate the procedure and they feel bad because they can't, because they think they should be able to tolerate it when they're white-knuckling the bed or the arm, whatever arm thing they have during this procedure, why are they thinking that? Probably because they're,
Yeah, you're right.
They're conditioned to. We are conditioned or kind of taught that we are supposed to be able to tolerate that. And then they're apologizing to the provider for not being able to tolerate getting a biopsy of their cervix. that's not the way it should be. They shouldn't have to apologize. And I don't want them to have to apologize. It's, we have to do better. We're the medical professionals, right? Our job is your health and your safety and doing whatever we can to minimize that pain and that potential trauma is what, that's our job. I don't ever want my patient to apologize because they couldn't tolerate something. I mean, that's heartbreaking. And I've seen that before. And that's what we need to change.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. On the flip side of that, we need to stop congratulating patients who white knuckle through and don't cry and don't yell and don't scream. Oh, you did so well. Like, it's a prize because you didn't show that this was uncomfortable. Like that. Yeah. And the whole like apologizing after complaining of pain has got to stop. Oh my gosh. Okay. At least from the survey I did, you know, the majority of patients, you know, we scored from severity from no anxiety to high anxiety. I asked, how many of you are anxious going to your gynecology visit for whatever it was for? And the vast majority of people, it was a 4 or a 5. Okay. And then
scale of 1 to 5, right?
Scale of 1 to 5. Yeah. And so the follow-up to that was why, and I gave some examples. So 27% of the respondents replied that it was a history, prior history of sexual assault or trauma. 67% said they were anxious because of a prior experience at the OB/GYN. And so vast majority of people are anxious about going, okay, have some level of severe or almost severe. And the vast majority of those, it's because of a prior experience, and a huge chunk of those as well, a prior history of sexual assault. So I think we need to approach every gynecology visit with this in mind.
Yeah, I mean, there's, and I'm sure, you know, trauma-informed care. We're not taught that. Now, maybe the medical students now, they're getting a little bit more of this type of training. But it's something that if we haven't been formally taught, it's something that we need to look into. We could teach ourselves about that, but it's very important to, as obstetricians and gynecologists, to be versed in that, because a lot of our patients are going to have some kind of trauma, but we don't want to be the ones traumatizing them as a profession, right? I don't want to do that. Now, I don't do gynecology anymore. I did a lot of procedures as a resident. I do only obstetrics now. And are there times when things are so emergent that I have to do something that I know is going to hurt the patient? The answer is yes. It's going to happen. Do I try at every chance I can to minimize that? Yes. But in those instances where I'm not able to, I go back to the patient. I sit down with them. I explain to them what happened, why it happened. I apologize that we didn't have time to do X, Y, and Z. And just having that conversation and being transparent about it, and this is exactly what happened, and making sure they understood that, means a lot. Just letting it go and letting the patient think about it over and over and having those question marks makes it worse. Now, I'm not going to have any kind of residual effects from that. Of course, anytime you have a traumatic anything, you know, I had a very traumatic birth, not by anyone's fault, but it's been 5 years and I still think about things. But at least I know that I was listened to and that this is why things happened, because my providers told me what was happening. You know, Mary Claire, you were there and you know, and so that helps. Now, if we have to do something like that and then we don't follow up, that makes it 10 times worse, right?
Right. You can't, you know, you do your best to keep the patient comfortable, but there are some situations where in an emergency, a true emergency, go ahead.
No, it's just, you know, especially now, let's keep in mind, we're digressing a little bit, because really there's no gynecologic office procedure that's an emergency. There's not.
Nope. Yeah, no.
I'm just bringing this up that, you know, yes, there's going to be times when no matter what we do, and this is mostly in obstetrics, things are going to happen and the patient's going to have pain, but we try to minimize it as much as we can. We try to, you know, let them know, well, that's what we should be doing anyway. And if we can't, we follow up and explain why things happen. There are ways to kind of mitigate those, you know, that experience there, and at least make sure the patient understands exactly what happened. But again, to my knowledge, there's no office gynecologic procedure that's emergent.
Yeah, no, but an endometrial biopsy, an IUD placement, and a cervical biopsy are not emergencies. You can reschedule, you can wait. So we've gotten comments, you know, from you guys, you know, through all this, you know, that women are so glad that this issue is being raised because they thought that they were the only one in the world that had gone through this and felt the same way and felt traumatized. I think it's affecting the women of color more. I think it's affecting lower socioeconomic status more, but it is not sparing anybody. There are people from every walk of life who are telling me the exact same thing, that the percentage does seem to be higher in lower socioeconomic societies and people of color. Okay, so if you are ready, get your pencils out. Okay, we're asking there, who are we? So if you're just joining, welcome. I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. I'm a OBGYN practicing in Houston, Texas. And this is Dr. Shannon Clark. She is a maternal fetal medicine specialist. So she did OB-GYN like me, and then another 4 years of fellowship, got her master's, and is now a professor at, well, we can't say where we work. And she's now a professor at a large university hospital.
You can find me at TikTok Baby Doc.
So, okay. So, thank you. So I'm going to talk about pain control for office gynecologic procedures. So get out your pencils. These are things
want you to get your opinion about one thing. Someone was asking me, I'm getting ready to go. I'm supposed to go have an IUD next week. How do I approach this subject with my doctor? Like, how do I approach pain control with them? I think there is some hesitance there, whether it's an intimidation factor or I don't know why. I mean, there's probably multiple factors at play why patients don't want to ask those kind of questions of their physicians. That needs to change as well, because you have the right to ask your provider anything, no matter what you're doing. And we should encourage that as providers. And if your provider's shutting you down, that's not the right provider for you. So as someone who's done more gynecologic procedures than me, what would you tell somebody who was concerned about having an IUD placed or a colpo biopsies or anything and worried about the pain? How could they approach that topic with their provider?
Yeah. I mean, after probably my first 2 years of practice, it was standard that I would start the conversation and offer it. Some people opted out because they wanted it done that day. That means they have to come back sometimes. So some was like, let me just try it. Let's see how we do. I also learned how to not use a tenaculum for endometrial biopsy. And so I had to use it for IUD because you have to measure the cervix for the placement. It's hard to get around that. But I got good if it was a paracervix to just use a ring forcep instead of the teeth, to just grasp the anterior lip of the, I would teach the residents that when they'd come by, but these are things no one taught me. I just kind of learned from clinical practice along the way and my effort to stop having people hurting so much. I got really good at cervical anesthesia, paracervical blocks. And so to broach this, if you don't feel comfortable enough to ask your doctor for pain medication, for a biopsy, you need to reschedule with a different doctor. This should not even be a question. There's a problem here, okay? Unless it's a brand new doctor, then, you know, if this is someone you'd seen for a while, there is a block there, okay? And it is your right. It is 100%. They have the stuff in the office, I guarantee you. And if you hesitate to ask, then maybe this is not the right doctor-patient relationship for you.
Feel comfortable asking pretty much anything of your provider. There might be a reason why. Maybe somewhere you may not even have had a bad experience, or maybe it's just that you're not connecting and you don't feel that comfort level to ask them those things. So, and that's for anything, not even about what we're talking about here, but for anything.
For
so
anything.
Go ahead.
So, yeah, I mean, I would say that is a time that you need to self-reflect and maybe find a new provider. And then when you call to make the appointment, it's okay to ask before you even walk in the door, does this provider provide pain control for this procedure? Just ask. Ask to speak to his nurse, her nurse, and they'll tell you. Yeah, he does almost everybody, you know.
And I've had trauma survivors and sexual assault survivors say, how do I ask my doctor if they are, have dealt with, you know, patients with things with, like, in my history. And that's another thing. You can ask them that, if they're, you know, they're versed in trauma informed care. So again, talk to their nurse and they'll tell you this. A lot of the practices will have more than one provider. Trust me, the nurses always know which doctor's better at what. And if this is something that you're particularly concerned about, they'll say, you know, you might want to, and it's a new practice for you, you might want to say, well, you might want to see Dr. X, because they're, you know, they're very, very good with this particular topic or particular issue. So, you know, there's things that you can ask the nursing staff when you're calling to make that first appointment to see if there's a doctor that's better suited for you.
So people are saying, you know, what do I do if I don't have a choice? Sometimes we're in rural areas, you know. We're going to arm you with information of sometimes you can, your doctor's open to be educated. You know, that's another sign of a really good doctor. If you have a place where you have another option, you don't have, these are not emergency procedures. You can ask and you have a right to this. And if you are immediately met with resistance and treated and said, you know, this is not painful, then you need to get up and go. And reschedule, you know, find someone else. Even if it's rural, it's worth the drive. You know, you can wait a month to have an endometrial biopsy.
Okay, so I just want to say, there's a comment here that says, if you mention pain, they assume you're lying, is how I feel. And then it looks like a doc said, I respectfully disagree, but respect your experience. So what I want to say here is, as providers, it's not our job to disagree with the patient, because we're not experiencing what they're experiencing. There's no way for us to do that. So if someone, you know, and I know that there's a history of us dismissing pain in our patients and in our field, well, actually across the board and all medicine. So I can't disagree with you if you're telling me you have pain. If I try, what am I going to do? Say, no, you don't. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, if my patient's telling me they're having pain, I got to figure out why. And is there a different reason for that? And we won't go through that, where it's not organic pain. There's actually another issue at play. But I don't assume that's the case until I rule out everything else, right? I can't assume anything until I make sure it's coming from no other reason. So, you know, what we can't do is negate our patient's experiences because we're assuming it's because of a psychological issue. Or a drug abuse history issue. We got to stop doing that to our patients. You know, assuming those things, especially in obstetrics, is what's causing a lot of morbidity and mortality in our patients. We can attribute it to one of those two things as long as we've ruled out everything else, especially in pregnancy. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I'm seeing the comments. They think we're drug seeking. So I broke my foot when I was 25 weeks pregnant and I was a third year resident. I slipped off a curb, twisted my ankle, totally broke my fifth metatarsal. Get taken into the ER. It's horribly painful, horribly painful. They x-ray it. Yep. It's like very broken. Okay. I'm contracting like crazy because I'm in so much pain. That's one thing that happens if you have trauma. And, my boss comes in, nice man, love him to death. And he's like checking my cervix, making sure I'm not in real labor. You know, it's just pain. And he offers me pain medicine. And I hesitated because I was worried I would be judged. He didn't judge me, but I was so used to it that I said no at first. And then I just kept contracting. And finally, I'm like, okay, I'll take something. My foot was throbbing. I thought I was going to die, but I did not want to be thought of as a drug seeker doctor. And so I ended up getting it eventually, but I understand how you feel, because that is, that kind of attitude was very pervasive when I was, 22 years ago when I was pregnant with my daughter. And I think it's still that, that line of thinking is still continued today.
Well, listen, are there patients that are drug seeking? Yes. I'm not going to lie. There are. But again, what I, my point is this, even with those that have a drug use history or misuse history, we can't assume that's what it is until we rule out everything else. Just automatically saying, oh, they have a substance misuse history, that's what they're here for, they don't really have pain, that's the wrong approach. Make sure there's no other reason for that pain before you come to that conclusion. Automatically jumping to conclusions and profiling patients is not the way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Addicts. Here are those pain control topics that you, what we were supposed to do like 10 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So pain control for office gynecology procedures. So there is some offices offer office-based anesthesia. I have not worked in an office like that in a long time with minimal or moderate sedation. So if your OB/GYN's office has a surgery center or they work in a larger, like multi-practice, some of those places do have surgical centers where they can do light to moderate sedation. Of course, there's things we call analgesics, which are like non-steroidals, like Motrin and ibuprofen, naproxen, and acetaminophen, which is Tylenol. There's local anesthesia. There's Tylenol plus narcotic, these like Tylox or Tylenol 3 or Norco, I'm forgetting all the names, Norco, Vicodin. And then non-pharmacologic techniques, music, relaxation, all that stuff. So local anesthesia. All right, let me just go by procedure. Hang on, let me slide down. So all of this information was compiled by a brilliant physician, Sarah Whetstone. She is the residency director at University of California, San Francisco. So I want to give her credit because this is all her work that she put all this together. This is a, I think this is a training module for her residents coming out of UCSF. Okay, so give me a second. Pain in the pelvic exam, 11 to 60% of women, this is from her data, report pain or discomfort during a pelvic exam. 10 to 80% of women report fear, embarrassment, anxiety during the pelvic exam. Our numbers are consistent on our survey with 60 to 80%. 3.2 is the main pain score for pelvic exam with discomfort. I think ours is a little closer to 3.5, maybe 3.6 out of 5. And then 17% of women reported a pain score of 6 to 10 out of 10 on a pelvic exam. Ours is much, much higher. If we back the scale down to 5, because they used it out of 10. So we know also that pelvic exams hurt as well. And there are people who are candidates to be offered pain relief for that. Don't be afraid to ask, especially if you're a trauma survivor. So, okay.
There, do you, yeah. Especially for those who have had trauma or sexual assault survivors, there is something called an exam under anesthesia. Mm-hmm. That is where you get your exam, pelvic exam, whatever it is that you need done under anesthesia, usually IV sedation. Now, that's not going to be done for everybody. It is going to be a cost. Your insurance may or may not cover it. But if that is something that, you know, you just cannot tolerate for whatever reason, even a pelvic exam, that is something to discuss with your doc. And it may be covered by your insurance and it may be doable. So it's called an exam under anesthesia. Now, this exams under anesthesia you're hearing about with medical students and training exams and all that, that's not the same thing. This is actually just taking you in under anesthesia, not a tube down your throat, but usually just slight IV sedation so that the exam can be done. Exam or EUA, exam under anesthesia.
Right. Okay. We do them all the time. I mean, there's when we have to examine children who cannot possibly consent or understand or would be traumatized, we take them to the OR routinely for exam under anesthesia. When people don't have the mental capacity to consent for pelvic, and it would be so traumatic to them, you know, people with very low IQs or mental health issues, we take them to the OR for EUAs, exams under mm-hmm. anesthesia. That is a thing. It is very, and I've never had one denied ever from insurance.
Okay.
So, okay.
Unfortunately, so it makes more problem for those that don't have private payers, but that's another topic.
Yeah. Okay. Insertion of IUD with local anesthesia. So paracervical block with 1% lidocaine. Okay, so paracervical block just means that your cervix is injected with lidocaine. So
the paracervical block is on either side, right? Versus intracervical will be the cervical face.
Right. So paracervical, kind of on the outside portion. And then you have intracervical where you go right to the inside.
And then intracervical.
So the tenaculum sites. So what this doctor recommends is you always want to inject where you're going to put the tenaculum sites. And then you get closer to the middle because you're kind of numbing the cervical canal where the instrumentation is going to go. The guest is Dr. Shannon Clark, TikTok baby doc here on TikTok. She is a maternal fetal medicine specialist, and we've known each other for years and years, and she's very passionate about this topic as well. So this doctor here quotes two studies that show a significant reduction of pain. So people's pain, they surveyed people's pain, and the average was a 6 out of 10 without pain medication, without the paracervical block. It went down to a 2 with the paracervical block. A second study validated the first study. They went from a 6 down to just below a 2 with a paracervical block in main pain scores. So it's not just a pinch. Our study said, how accurate was the just a pinch description described your pain? And the vast 90 something percent said, not at all. Not at all. So endometrial biopsy. The painful parts of an endometrial biopsy are the tenaculum placement and the actual performance of the endometrial biopsy. And so the necessity of using a tenaculum for a endometrial biopsy was actually studied. They did 118 women. They randomized half to with a tenaculum, half to without. The mean pain scores without tenaculum, they went from 7.7 to 4.4. So if you don't use the tenaculum, if you're there's a skill factor, but some people just have a very forgiving cervical canal where you don't actually need any force. You just slide it right through and the tenaculum is not necessary. So my standard of practice became try without the tenaculum because I knew it'd be comfortable, more comfortable. And then if it wasn't going through, then apply the tenaculum after, you know, doing the injection. So, so that is, you can opt out of the tenaculum. Your physician doesn't have to use it. And they were successful in all but 3, only 3 people out of the 61. They couldn't do it without a tenaculum on the cervix. So yeah. So intrauterine anesthesia, they compared 1% to 2%. Long story, it looks like 1% does the trick. So
wait, what's anesthesia?
I'm sorry.
What's intrauterine anesthesia?
So intrauterine anesthesia is with 2% lidocaine is actually when they just take it and inject it into the endometrial canal. So it's kind of like lavaging the endocervix with the lidocaine without injecting it. And so as far as if I understand it correctly, because I've never used that technique, maybe that's something I could learn. It did not, it was superior. There was a couple of studies that showed maybe it worked a little better than as non-steroidal. So here, you get some Tylenol and we're going to go put some numbing medicine here. I'm going to take the numbing medicine. So pain management for endometrial biopsy. Okay, so those of you who have EMBs in general, misoprostol doesn't help. So giving you Cytotec the night before has not been shown to be helpful. So say no thank you.
For the IUD insertion?
They never even talk about it for IUD.
They didn't?
Mm-mm, she doesn't mention it.
So I know that some
talking about pain.
But it's supposed to help, like especially in those that have never had kids before, putting a meso might help open the cervix a little bit to make it easier.
It might help with ease of insertion, but it's not helping with pain.
Mm-hmm.
So try to perform the endometrial biopsy without tenaculum, and then if it's not going, then make sure you inject your tenaculum sites, you know, with your lidocaine before you apply the tenaculum. Make sure it's set in, and then proceed with your procedure. So they talk about colposcopy to do the spray for colposcopy before you look, and then to do injections for the biopsy significantly reduce the pain for cervical biopsy.
We're specifically for the injections for the colposcopy, because I know there's some.
So when we do colpos, you go and you do your colposcopy first and you identify the sites that you're going to biopsy. Remove the colposcope, inject those sites, then go back in with your punch biopsy.
So what about the concern for, because I know there was some data, not data, some thought that doing and inserting where you're taking the biopsy, because you're looking for precancers or cancerous cells, could affect the results of the biopsy.
I've only seen that a couple of times, but I don't know if that's ever been proven.
But that I know is a reason why people won't do the actual injections into the face of the cervix. But you can still do the paracervical on the sides of the cervix.
And you can also at least try to spray, you know, lidocaine spray to numb up the area. Yeah, there is a spray. It's in every gynecologist's office. It should be. We had it. So that is it. I mean, you know, asking for, so in summary, you know, this doctor is challenging her trainees to make office procedures painless. That is the goal. Your ultimate goal is to make this painless. Expecting a woman to tolerate pain is barbaric and unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And that I'm going to get some heat for that, but expecting someone to tolerate pain against her will when she has an option, should we expect, and I can't expect not everyone to have pain, you know, like, but I'm going to try.
Yeah.
I'm going to try.
Yeah. So, and one thing that I also heard as well is that Valium works really well to give it, to get it before the procedure. Yeah.
If they're anxious and they, if we talk about anxiety, I will absolutely prescribe it.
But you have to keep in mind also when we're giving something orally, whether it's a pain medicine orally or pre-medicating, or Valium, you're going to have somebody there with you to drive home. We're not going to let you give you Valium and then put you in the car.
Yeah.
So those are things that if it can be planned, that's great. You just need to have somebody with you to drive you. If you're taking anything orally, especially IV, they're not going to let you go home by, you know, you can't drive yourself home. But any of the local anesthesias that we do or the injections, you don't need somebody there with you because it's local and it's not systemic, meaning not going through your body and you would still be able to drive. As far as NSAIDs go, the things like ibuprofen,
naproxen,
anything like that, that's really going to help more for like the cramping from an EMB. After I had my cramping and I pre-medicated with ibuprofen, I cramped so bad the rest of the night, I was in bed. And because I don't know if you know what EMB is, the pipette goes up into your uterus, you withdraw and you do this back and forth motion to get a sample. And it just makes your uterus angry and contract. So it's like having really bad period contractions, but worse than that was what I had. And I took ibuprofen. Now, is that going to scare some people because I said that? Yes, it is. But I want you to know that not everybody's going to have that. And keep in mind also that I have never had a baby vaginally. And that does make a difference. It's been shown that some individuals who have had delivered vaginally, the baby came through the cervix, and they don't have as much experience, quite as much pain as someone who's never had their cervix open and dilated for any reason before. So that's something to consider as well. And again, we're not trying to scare anybody. I'm just being honest about my particular experience and Dr. as Mary Claire was about her HSG. And it's just, so you guys know okay. I'm all about empowering, and so is Mary Claire. This is empowering you with information to have these conversations with your provider. That's what we're trying to do.
So if you have questions or anything specifically that we can answer, drop it in the comments below, and we will do our best to get it answered for you. And thank you, everyone, for sharing your stories and getting this out there so other women feel validated and empowered and realize they're not the only ones. I've gotten some beautiful messages that our, you know, videos gave them the courage to open a conversation with their doctors, and their doctors were actually open to the discussion, and they end up making a plan together, and they just were so scared and just assumed that their doctor would not help. And if you have a positive, and there's so many out there who have wonderful physicians, wonderful midwives, wonderful nurse practitioners who are doing all the things to try to keep you comfortable and inform you, please elevate them. Please tell everyone you know. Please refer them, give them good reviews on Yelp, call their bosses, you know, because we have to highlight the people who are doing the right thing, because everyone is now assume, not everyone, it seems on social media, that, you know, the good guys are getting left behind, the good girls and the good guys, you know. So there are physicians, nurse wives, practitioners, healthcare providers who will do this for you, who won't even question you. Absolutely no problem. Okay. And if you know of them, please share that information with as many people as possible.
What Mary Claire and I can do is put something together for you guys, because Dr. Haver, Mary Claire, has been doing kind of a literature search about the different articles for multimodal pain modalities for office procedures. We could kind of get a document together about what options are for these procedures, and we could share it as a Google Doc, right?
Yeah.
We'll try to get something like that together, and I'll share it on my site at TikTokBaby.com and share it on Dr. Haver's.
We'll put it on.
Yeah. So you guys can have access to that. But give us a little bit of time, because we want to make sure it's evidence-based. So when you take that to your provider, we'll include the resources as well, so that they'll know this is where we got the information from, and we're not just saying this. One thing about myself and Mary Claire is this. We are both trained academically. I'm still in academic medicine. I am still a clinician, researcher, and educator. And anything I put on my platform is evidence-based. I don't talk about, and if it's not, and it's just my own opinion or anecdotally from my experience, I will say that. But I support everything by what's in the literature. Now, the other thing to consider as well is when you're looking at literature, one article does not change clinical practice. So you can find any article to back up whatever you've been told or have been said, but what you look at is the totality of the evidence and what is out there and what makes sense and how the studies were performed and how many study subjects were there and what the statistics were. So there's so much into looking at whether or not a study is good. Just because someone Googles and says, oh, here's this study that said X, Y, and Z, doesn't mean it's a good study. So what we do is go by what's evidence-based, and that's what we'll put together for you guys, so you can have this and have the data to back it up.
Okay. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Give us a few taps on the way out. Thank you so much. And we'll chat again soon.
Will this be available for anybody to see afterwards?
I will download it from TikTok. TikTok won't let me repost it. You can't do anything longer than 3 minutes. But I will put it once I get out of – I'm in TikTok jail right now, guys. This has angered some group of people.
Yeah, and honestly, actually, I am too. I have two
videos. We both got Instagram jail and TikTok jail because this has angered enough people where we've been reported and we've been banned.
So they knew we were going to do this. They knew they were going to do this. I'm not banned on Instagram. I think probably because I'm verified there, but here I'm not. And I posted one video and then another, and they're still under review. That's never happened to me I decided to team up with you.
So yeah,
so there you go.
Dr. Clark, where can they find you on Instagram?
So on TikTok, I'm at TikTokBabyDoc. On Instagram, I'm at BabiesAfter35. I know they're two different names, but that's where I started first. And just so you know, I have a gazillion articles and tons of information on COVID and pregnancy and trying to conceive in the postpartum and lactation, if you're interested in that information. But I share all kinds of stuff there.
Okay. All right, guys. Take care. Have a good night. And we'll chat again soon.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that discussion. Now listen to the next episode on Pregnancy After 40, From Preconception to Delivery, and Health Disparities.